Right, so welcome everybody. This is the real beginning now. I'm very pleased to welcome you to this busy day that we have ahead of us in the Essex Film Festival. We started on Thursday night with Mark Rappaport showing some of his recent work. Last night we had the first screening at the ICA. We showed the previously unseen Manuel de Oliveira film. So we've got off to a pretty good start on Thursday and Friday. If you haven't seen the programme as a whole, there's a very sort of simple one-page presentation of the programme which runs right through to the 24th. So we have events here, we have events at the ICA, we have obviously the Kidlat Tahinic retrospective, including his latest film. We have tonight, after the very busy day here, we have a Sarah Wood event at the ICA tonight. Tomorrow, after Perfume Nightmare, we have Bani Khushnoudi, who's going to be presenting her film The Silent Majority Speaks. And we also have here on Monday morning, we have a special event around Arts Council documentaries, Essayistic Arts Council documentaries. And we have, in addition to all the Kidlat Tahinic screenings and events, on Wednesday night, I'd also like to point out a very special event with Miranda Pennells. She's going to be showing The Host, but also presenting a whole kind of some archive films, some BP-produced films made in Iran, and sort of opening the whole thing up into a big sort of exploration of, obviously, the use of archive footage, but particularly in relation to the politics of oil and energy. So that's a very special event on Wednesday at the ICA. So there's a lot of stuff, and I'd encourage you, if you haven't had a chance to look at the whole programme, to take a look. Okay. So as for today, we do have a busy schedule, and all I'm going to do then is just say a few words to introduce Katie Grant, whom many of you will probably know or heard of. Katie actually joined the SA Film Festival group this year, and I have to say that her contribution has been incredibly, as you'd expect, incredibly positive, incredibly generous, and very, very creative. And I think that is sort of does, I think, sum up a lot about Katie as a person and also about her contribution to academic life and to thinking about film, and particularly thinking about the visual essay, the videographic study of film through film, as it were. And I think that one thing I've seen sort of Katie talking about her trajectory through the academic world, I think two things I really admire about Katie, which I think is important just to say clearly in public, is one, that she completely puts into practice the values that she preaches. So the generosity, the openness, the sharing, the positivity around doing collective work is what she, you know, night and day. She seems to tweet in her sleep, I think. But she's night and day, she's putting those values into practice, and I think that it's a really, really important thing to say that she really does do what she stands for, and I think that's evident from her work that's out there, but it's also evident, I think, from working with her closely as a colleague over the years, and particularly in the context of the essay film. And I think that's just, I wanted to say that in public. The other thing I'd like to say in public is I think that Katie did a very brave thing at one point in her academic career. We're more or less the same age, we have more or less similar trajectory. But I think what Katie did brilliantly at one point, she was prepared to take the risk of taking a lateral move in order to go forward. And I think that Katie was, in a sense, stepped away from a particular type of academic approach and a particular type of research approach, not because she didn't, you know, not to denigrate it or to put it down in any way, but because she felt that she wanted to do something which was also playful, that was creative, that it was a way, that had a certain type of curiosity that was taking the study of film in a different direction with a different approach. And I think she made that move at a certain time, and I think that shows a certain type of courage and risk as well, which I think needs to be foregrounded. And I think by doing that, she sort of was able to move into new areas with a great deal of freedom. And in a sense, I think what's probably happened in the last 10 years is that many other people have kind of made that move. And I'm not saying they've necessarily followed Katie, but that now where she is, with In Transition, for example, which is a peer-reviewed videographic journal, you can see that in many ways in the last 10 years, when Katie made that move, probably not consciously, she was actually going into the future, and that many, many people within the academic world, when you see how big this phenomenon has become, have actually now, shall we say, joined you on your journey or something like that. So you are a pioneer, and I think you've done amazing things. I think the Film Studies for Free was an amazing initiative. Obviously, the Audiovisual Sea is very much in the same spirit as In Transition. But today, Katie's going to be presenting, it's effectively a preview, isn't it, really, of the premiere of the latest issue of In Transition. So she's going to be making a few introductory comments, then you get the whole wonderful thing in one blast, and then there'll be some room for conversation afterwards. So I'd just like to welcome very warmly the wonderful Katie Grant.
Embarrassed to stand up after that lavish introduction. Thank you very much, Michael. What I am is very, very fortunate. I was able to make certain moves that are not open to everyone, and they happen to be open to me at a particular time. But yes, lots of things came of them, and some of them I'm going to be talking about today. So I'm standing before you today as both a practitioner of audiovisual film studies, of videographic film and moving image studies, of video essay-based approaches to film and moving image studies. We don't have a set name yet. We don't want one either. But we are in transition, certainly. And I'm also standing before you as an editor and founder of this journal, a co-editor with my colleagues Christian Keasley of Middlebury College, Drew Morton of Texarkana, University of Texas University, and we've just recently been joined by a fourth editor, Chiara Grizzaffi of Milan University. And we, certainly the first three of us, established this journal In Transition 3 years ago. We were formed as a group 3 years ago. We were invited to set up a journal by Media Commons, who is the host of this particular website, and Cinema Journal, which is the leading, certainly US-based, cinema moving image studies journal in the world, in English. So that was very lucky, and we were given a huge amount of leeway. I think possibly what people wanted from us at that time was not what they necessarily got, because what we really wanted to do at every stage is to keep our options open with it and not to close off what we felt was a really promising new field. So we weren't obsessed by ideas of academic equivalence. And these are issues that will come up through the selection of videos that we're going to show today. We weren't worried about equivalence. We weren't worried about things like lengths and how many minutes of a video equate to how many words of an academic article. But what we did want to do is to try and do this work in a peer-reviewed context, because it's easy enough to gather and publish video work online now. But what do we do in the academic context with this work? And yet one may argue and think that there's no need for an academic context for this work. You just do it. Certainly I'm not publishing places like this, I'm just doing it. But of course, for younger scholars, people who want to begin and continue their careers in practical-based approaches, a website like this and an enterprise like this is really, really important, because those kinds of things count. They count certainly in the UK, they really count in the US, where tenure committees and so on are obsessed by where you publish your work and the kind of value that it acquires as a result. So we feel it's an important project, but we've managed to innovate in a number of other ways other than just being a moving image studies journal. First of all, I wanted, before I move away from this page, to apologise that Laura Mulvey was going to be here with me today, and for various international flight kerfuffle reasons, she's very sorry not to be able to be here today, but hers was the first video that we published at In Transition in the very first issue, her wonderful study of Marilyn Monroe and Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. So if you scroll down to our first issue, you can find Laura's pioneering work, because she was doing this way before, in an academic context, way before anyone else. But we are a journal with 8 issues, I think, now, beginning with that one, and then moving on through very special issues. Our first issues were curated to try and generate our own discourse and inviting other people to join in this conversation. Before, in 2015, a year ago, we launched our first peer-reviewed video. Let's see, let's go to one of my favourite ones. Here, and you can see what we do. We have, unfortunately, we have a few constraints with our website still, so we have to describe the maker's statement as a curator's note. But that notwithstanding, what we do is openly peer review work. And it's an interesting endeavour. I may say more about it at the end. So we each peer review video comes accompanied by two peer review reports by named peer reviewers. who agree at every step. Everything is open. When they review the video, they know who the video is by. If they have a conflict of interest, they have to declare it at the outset and so on. So everything is very transparent. Now, we're not doing that just because we're committed to transparency, although we are, but also because we're trying to generate language about videographic film and moving image studies, and ways of understanding its value. These are obvious ways of understanding to makers, but to a kind of broader sense of the discipline, we feel this kind of work is very valuable. So I'm going to show you work from the issue that has not yet been published, and it will be published in about 10 days' time, in early last days of March or early days of April. We're just finishing putting the finishing touches to it. But as you can see, so unpublished. The very first video I'll show you is this one. We're going to show five videos. We didn't select them for the screening. We just decided we would screen whatever is in our latest issue. And that's a shame in some ways, because there's some other work. They didn't quite make it in timings. And we have one of those authors there. But John Gibbs got a marvellous video essay that hopefully will be coming out in the June issue instead. But nonetheless, we have one of the authors here with us today from issue 3.1, whose video will be on 3rd. And his name is Junaid Chakilat, and he is lecturer in Nottingham Trent University in the Communication, Culture and Media Department. I have to single him out as well, because he's made a video with mature content. I don't see any children in the audience, which is just as well. But when you see the Julianne Moore video come on, you'll be aware of mature content in that video. But the five other videos are beginning with Tony Patrickson's video, Kataskopos. Tony is digital arts and film lecturer at the University of Ireland, Galway. The second video, called Spielberg Touchscreen, by Ken Provencher, who is associate professor in the Faculty of Media Studies at Josei International University in Japan. Junaid, I've mentioned. Irene Gustafsson's video, which is the longest video. Most of these videos are quite short. We may talk about that. Irene's is a 24-minute long video essay called Facing the Subject on Observation. And she is associate professor in film and digital media at the University of California, Santa Cruz. And then finally, we end with Jason Mattel, a renowned TV scholar, who's moving into this work, but making a film on film this time. His video, Adaptations Anomalies, not Anomalisa's Anomalies, which we haven't seen yet, but anyway. And he is Professor of American Studies in Film and Media Culture at Middlebury College. I think that's all I had to say, except for the sound levels of all of these videos are going to be different. We're going to be playing them in one package, so I will be bobbing up and down, altering the volume. And sorry for any kind of awful moments of things being too loud or too quiet. I will try and resolve them as soon as possible. Okay. Thank you.
Well, Katie, I mean, I think the main thing is, given the time, I think is really just to have as many conversations from the audience as possible. I mean, this was there was a great deal of excitement and anticipation about this event, and in fact the three events today. So I think in many ways it would, I assume there'll be plenty of people in the audience who will have a prior interest in this kind of practice. I realised in my introduction I didn't say the word practitioner enough, which you specifically asked me to. So as a practitioner, Katie, I mean, I just wondered one thing, which is a very sort of just a banal question, and then just open it up to people with better questions than I can think of. But it did occur to me, I mean, how typical is this particular selection compared to the kind of growing body that sort of emerged since you went kind of down this more, I wouldn't say institutional line, but there's something more formal about it being a proper journal with a, you know, with it being, you know, peer reviewed and referable and all the things that you brought up at the beginning. How typical is this, and are there, I mean, what struck me in a sense was that there was some where you could see it was almost not in a bad way, but you could see that this practice might evolve towards the illustrated lecture almost, which, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that whatsoever, but you know, in a sense, you have an argument which could almost just be written down on paper and there are illustrative pictures. You know what I mean? That might be, and this would be an interesting way of doing that would be slightly different. Whereas others, I do think you could almost see this is really visual. In a sense, it's sort of like visual thinking. It's much closer to a more kind of what you might think of being an artistic practice happening, which happens to then inhabit this academic world. So you see what I mean? That struck me in those five. You could see some which seem to be much more towards the end of the illustrative, the visually or the audiovisually illustrated paper and talk, and some which were much more just grasping something in a formal way and then allowing ideas to come out of that. So, I mean, I'm not intending, but I mean, those two kind of tendencies, do you, Is that a sort of a reasonable way of trying to map out the way these things are flowing now, the kind of movement, as more and more people, as you say, more and more people in more and more institutions are doing this?
So I think that might be what it looks like at first view. So I had quite a lot to do with the development in terms of overseeing it as an editor of these works. I'd say, and so did the peer reviewers, mm-hmm. And one of whom, in fact, is here, Richard Mizek, who's going to be showing this film this afternoon, peer reviewed Irene Gustafsson's work. I would say hers came in pretty much ready. There were a few small amendments that were requested and made that were really quite minor. But the others, and Irene is a filmmaker, so she's making this kind of work already, and it's great for her to be able to publish it in a journal rather than just showing it at festivals and hoping it gets a release on a collected DVD at some point. So for her,
was that The Animal?
That was The Animal, uh-huh, one, yeah, okay. Facing the subject. And I think in a way that might have been one that felt quite like an illustrated lecture,
yeah,
because it's quite, it's an essayistic script, yeah. It's yeah. a scripted piece. But I happen to know that 3/4 of the film material she used are from pre-existing material that she might have used in a lecture. And 1/4 of it is her own footage of animals. Mm-hmm. I'd say there's a lot more material thinking and audiovisual thinking going on in that one than might at first appear to be the case. But the other ones, I have to say, even though the ones that may appear like that, or Junaid's work, sadly Junaid had to depart on an urgent family matter, but he'll come back in a second. Junaid's work is absolutely, it was an offshoot or an offspun product from his written work on Julianne Moore. He's writing a book that's actually, I think, going to come out quite soon on Julianne Moore's star persona from a queer perspective. And he has the longest authorial statement as well. So there's a lot going on in the thinking that produced that work, but it's material thinking that produced it. Yeah. It's being able to juxtapose clips and organise them into those sort of themed motifs, and then make them flow, and then experiment with music and so on. And it's a work of montage as well as of academic thinking.
Yeah.
And the others, I saw Jason's one developed from the beginning. He's writing a book about adaptation, which again will be out later this year. And so completely didn't think he would make a video essay, and didn't know what he would make a video essay on when he started making the video essay. So it came from, John was a witness to this process as well, came from kind of nowhere. And he had huge fun. Mm-hmm. In producing this. And so the voice we hear from Jason in that work is very much one that's like his blog. He has a very successful and well-known blog called Just TV, which is a more playful, more spontaneous kind of writing style that he has been able to engage here, although it's still, quite learned as well, and certainly original, all the other things that we might want academic work to be. So I think there's probably more variety, but your first question was, is it a typical issue? And we've been going in our peer-reviewed kind of version for a year now, and so this is the fifth issue, I think, of peer-reviewed work. And I'd say this is not the most typical. I think that actually we have quite a lot more variety. Four of these pieces were voice-overlaid. And although the scripts for each of them were written differently, some of them were written before, some of them were written during, some of them were written after, and then the voiceover recorded, I think that's, we wouldn't necessarily have so much voice-overlaid work. Like more montage work.
Could you explain how this works? Is it an open submission, or do people...
It's an open submission, yeah. You go to a website, you click on contribute, and you'll find out exactly how. No. We're very open in what we solicit. Our work.
And then how does it work? I really don't understand.
You email us with the link to Vimeo, and you write an academic statement.
And then you get to make it, and then it goes to...
No, it's already... It's usually... I think nobody writes... We've had one or two very speculative inquiries, but people submit rather like written work being submitted to a peer-reviewed written academic journal. The work exists and is sent in to us. And we work, and this is the interesting process, it's been fascinating, because when written work is submitted to a journal and is sent up for peer review, recommendations are made, the authors have or have not to carry them out. Obviously sometimes contradictory instructions are given by peer reviewers and you can't carry all of them out, so the editors have to intervene and say what would be a sensible procedure, and the authors have to agree. Or they rebut, which is exactly the same as it is for written work. One of the major differences is that with written work, you can change everything about a written piece as an editor, almost. probably not ethically, but you can certainly change a lot. If a really disastrously written piece comes in, but it's got something brilliant in it, you work and work and work until it's finally in a sort of decent position. It's harder to do that with video work. It's harder to make film work. The precision involved in the moment-by-moment unfolding of audiovisual arguments is a lot more relentless and austere a process than the written equivalent, where you just change a noun because because that one's inappropriate or So we have similar kinds of amendments, some typographical. Some of those had their credit. You know, there's sort of, I saw actually still one or two errors we need to get rid of before we publish. So those kinds of errors are the same, or those amendments are the same. But in terms of how editors change the work, I don't think we can change it as much. And so that's one of the other reasons why we've discovered we're very happy to have an open peer review system. And when you read the reports, you'll find not all of them are glowing. Not all of them make it look like the peer reviewer necessarily loved the work. But the work has kind of come together in a way that everybody involved in the process feels happy about publishing it.
Can I ask, so nobody's rejected?
Oh, no, we do reject it, yes.
But you work with the peer review...
Everybody who...
practitioner work together to produce... and transform something.
Journals nowadays give statistics about rejection rates. We can't really do that. It wouldn't be meaningful after a year. But I'd say roughly about 50% of what we have had submitted to us in that period, the period we've been going, has been straightforwardly said, we've said no thank you. But even when we've done that, we've written to the author with very detailed comments. Even if we don't send it out to peer review, the editors send back very detailed comments. And we've had, I'd say, 50% of that 50% resubmitted. And a small number of those videos will be published by us eventually. So those are the kind of processes. So it's hard work being an editor on this journal. It's hard work being an editor, I think, anyway. It's usually invisible labour. But the work on this kind of material is different.
So just on that very precise point, because it is a fascinating point that you raised there, because, I mean, as an editor of books and of journals, I mean, you do occasionally just completely rewrite.
Occasionally you do.
It happens a lot, but, I mean, because the prose can be transformed.
You have your hands on the material.
But have you had any examples, or could you imagine a situation where, as editors of this journal, you would actually do a re-edit and say, supposing this 30-second sequence looked like this?
Yeah.
Would you do it in that way?
I can't imagine. Yeah, you write a report. I think you instruct. But even then, when you make a suggestion, you can get it very easily wrong, and it messes up the balance of the work. So that kind of intervention you have to be very careful with. And so we're very aware, probably more than most editors are, of the negotiation-based methods of this work. That it's, and it's about getting to as good a point as you can get, where everybody is in a relative consensus. And there's sometimes blood on the carpet, there's always blood on the carpet in academic reviewing.
But it wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, because presumably you could say, hey, well, supposing it looked like this, and that wouldn't necessarily then have to remain like that. You could actually, insofar as everything is happening, what I find fascinating is the fact that, therefore, that everything is happening through the editing process, the hands-on, the cutting and the clipping and the changing and the playing with the sound and whatever. So, in a sense, it wouldn't be so terrible a thing to say, well, here's your essay, we thought it could look like this. And the person wouldn't just either say yes or no. They could say, well, no, actually, I've seen and heard the changes you're suggesting. It could work exactly. How if you rewrite someone's prose for them, they could come back and sort of say, okay, yeah, that's good, or I'll try and do something similar when I rewrite it. So, but in a sense, send them a written report is different from actually sending them back an audiovisual report.
Yes.
I mean? So you could imagine an interesting exchange like that could happen, actually.
I mean, I want to just say one thing, a lot of hands are coming up, but in response to that, I give you two... detached from any reality that you possibly know of, examples of changes we've made. So, one video that came in at 20 plus minutes long, and pretty much everybody who looked at it said, you need to cut this by at least half. And that was done, and it's a million times better. Another one came in with twice as much voiceover as the final version. There was a pretty general consensus that there was too much voiceover. Stripped it out, the author then made other changes because of that, and it's like an amazing improvement. But then sometimes you don't need to do anything to a work, and any suggestion that you might make will make it worse. So there's a huge responsibility with those kinds of interventions.
So I was going to say, I think Lily, you've got your hand up first.
do you have, kind of in a nutshell, your criteria as you receive the submission and you start to look and you start to discuss it with your editors? Are there sort of three things that you want a video essay to do? Because they do very different things, don't they?
I mean, we've got a mission statement which is about a sentence long. It probably does have three clauses in it, but I wouldn't say that we have a kind of list. But we want new knowledge. Which is conveyed through the audio-visual form of the work. Now, new knowledge or understanding, okay? And I'd say when we boiled academic work down, apart from the audio-visual form bit, the new knowledge or understanding is what academic work should do. And that, therefore, obliterates questions of length, because new knowledge can really be quite small, and we don't mind if it is quite small. Or even a conclusion like I'm not sure, it does mean that in fact we're really not after illustrated lectures. We want the audio visual form of the work to be the main way in which that work presents and contributes its new knowledge and understanding.
Just before we go, when I said illustrated lecture, I didn't mean that in any negative way. I was just thinking, having watched those five and thinking as a relative outsider, that one could imagine, you know, as in the tradition of the essay, the essay film. I mean, some are closer to here is an argument and the images and so forth, the sounds. And I'm choosing illustrate my argument. I mean, Chris Marker is a lot Irene's of work. Chris Marker films you could say are illustrated lectures.
I think Irene's work is really subtle in that respect. So it seems like here's a script she's written, having read Derrida and so on, and applied it to a bunch of images from films. But the timing, the way that the Greta Garbo eyes at a particular moment meet your, kind of move around as the voice coalesces with it. That's the kind of thing we want. We want to see subtlety and originality at that level of argument. Mm.
So Kim, sorry, you wanted to ask a question?
I've got so many things to ask, as usual. But one thing I wanted to ask, obviously this really lends itself to film and TV, clearly, because it's the image. But can you see it being applied to things like games, comics, books, art?
Yeah, it already is. And there are other video-based journals that look at other cultural forms. There's one called Audiovisual Thinking, which is really microscopic videos about anything, and they often have themed issues, and they're really tiny. When they first uploaded their instructions, they said videos of no more than 5 megabytes. So I was thinking, really? This was before GIFs were really being circulated and things. This kind of they're very much a generalist journal that pre-existed ours. I think we are definitely of film and moving images. Yeah. So yes, we actually haven't had one on television. Straightforwardly published yet. Even Jason Mattel decided not to do one on TV. But Drew Morton, our co-editor, has done one on games and comic style of movies. There's lots of other, there's lots of video essays on games emerging. So yes, I mean, absolutely anything. Our thing is film and moving images. We're really coming from a tradition of film and television and screen studies.
So, yes, please.
I thought they were all fantastic, anyway.
Thank you. I'll pass that on.
It's a question, really, about copyright and, intellectual property rights.
Yeah.
How do you cope with permission to use the film, etc.?
We have a huge piece of fortune in that we're based in the US. So although Junaid and I have to obey UK law when we make our video essays in this country, provided we get away with that, we can send them off to be published in, well, I can't, but he can send them off to be published in transition, because their rules and guidelines about this are very clear, unlike here. Every year they have to argue for them, but they have a system called fair use, which is a legal set of exceptions. They have to be subjectively kind of defended and subjectively argued against, so nothing is ever sure, but they involve things like using small amounts, not damaging the commercial value of the original, using material for the purposes of criticism and research, and the additional one in the US, which is why even quite long clips, because some of Irene's clips are really quite long, we think are completely arguable, we can argue for them, is because there's another notion which we don't have, sadly, in much of Europe and not in the UK, which is transformative use. So although Irene's taking quite a lot of footage from the film she looks at, she's very beautifully and subtly weaving them together with a soundtrack. This also appropriated, but in other words, the material is substantially different from how it appears. Now, you can say Jason Mattel with his freeze framing and also talking over it and using sound effects where they're not. He is changing the work in order to comment on it. In the UK, we have Fair Dealing, which is sort of has some similarities. We also had a few breaks passed for us when the Digital Economies Act was passed a couple of years ago, but things are much more fragile, I would say, in this country, and there's some work of advocacy needed, and some of us in the room are going to be trying to kind of forge a network of for information and advocacy about these forms where possible.
Like Julianne Moore, sorry, I mean, you know.
Yeah,
she probably haven't seen it, has she?
Yeah, I bet she'd love it actually, but we're hoping she will. But the really interesting thing about Junaid's work is it was tiny fragments. He has one piece of music which may or may not be easy to defend in a court of law, but luckily it's been sent off and published in the US now.
Sorry, I think Mandy was in first and then you.
Yeah.
I have a question about voiceover. Mm-hmm. All of the video essays that I've ever really liked have very seductive voiceovers, and almost all of them have been voiced by the filmmaker Pearl himself. Go to the Gutzmann film, the Pearl button that's on at the moment at the Renoir. Really, you could turn off the screen, even though it's a very, very spectacular film, and just listen to Gutzmann's voice. So I have a question. Would you accept a video essay, I might propose one, where you just listened to the voices?
Oh yes,
yeah. And had no images.
I make that kind of work, so yes, we would. But I don't use voiceover very much in my own work, so that in a way, and I would say In Transition has published quite a lot of work that isn't voiceover led or featuring voiceovers. We also have, you're assuming that those were all the authors.
Well, that's
they were.
That's a they were, I think.
They were.
As I can tell, because I checked.
They were that kind of style as well, where you, in a way, the contract you're entering into by using that style is the belief that it's the author's.
Okay, but isn't it predominantly the case that in this type of work, it is the director's voice?
I think that what's very interesting about this type of work is the concept of the director. Is not really entering the picture very much.
Okay,
because all of these works were made by, I know that they were actually edited, composed by the authors. But in fact, quite a lot of video essay work is made by the technician in the department who's being directed by the academic. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably traditionally the case. And I don't want to name names, but some of the significant pieces of work, not in the issue you just saw, but that would be the case. But I'm very much in the generation arguing that it should be us making it, and that the practice of the process of material thinking is actually what's really interesting.
But what happens if the author doesn't have a very seductive voice?
Well, you could argue. There was a huge variety of voices and accents and approaches just in the small sample that you saw there. We would definitely comment if the voiceover for some reason blocked the work and the communication of its arguments or its process. It would be one thing that we commented on. As I said, we did comment on the video where there was twice as much voiceover. That was a sort of feeling of droning on. And the instruction to remove some of it resulted in less droning, much less, in fact, not at all, droning video.
Similar to that, I thought they were great. There is a sense that they're all, they're kind of looking towards a documentary genre.
Yeah.
They're not, there seems to be something. I'm wondering, do you get much more lo-fi thrown together videos presented? Is that what you...
Yeah, that's what I do.
Back to that question, I suppose somebody like Adam Curtis, the very seductive voiceover with very seductive edit, is something that's very, very problematic.
It's a mode of rhetoric that we should always suspect, absolutely. And in a way, it's why I quite like Jason Mattel's sort of... approach to it, which is both kind of weirdly, as both of the peer reviewers said, paranoid critical in its method, but also kind of like full of gaps and jumps and leaps and the kinds of things you don't normally find in most sanctioned academic work. But I think, as I said, it's a pretty atypical issue. Junaid's work is really the only one coming from what I would say is an internet tradition. That is about shorter videos, that is about fan tributes. I think he's also coming from an artist tradition, work like Joseph Cornell on Rose Hobart, where you know you have just kind of clips of this actress in this B-movie, all joined together without much else from the film, where we kind of gaze on her and somehow have access to the author's fascination. I think there's a lot of Junaid's fascination with Julianne Moore in that video, and I think that's coming from a different tradition to the sort of normalised traditions of documentary. But I do think you're right with this particular selection of work. They're coming from a documentary tradition, they're coming from a personal essay film tradition to a certain extent.
And how, I mean, do you receive work that is sort of more, clearly definitely. At the experimental end of this process?
Absolutely. There was one we published, I think, 2 issues ago, it's 2 issues ago, by a Turkish female critic on women in the films of, and I never know how to pronounce his name, but Ceylan, Nuri Ceylan. You know who I mean, a really wonderful filmmaker, and it is just a supercut of images of women from his films, so very much in that internet tradition, but beautifully made, beautifully edited, really wonderful use of music, and making an academic point, and it, in fact, surprising you, because when we first received this video and watched it, we thought, it's just going to be a supercut, as if we actually quite like supercuts, but in a way it's harder for a supercut to necessarily be academic work to start with, but this was so subtly edited and so surprising with its twists and turns that its argumentation was kind of astounding. So
one more question, maybe we can move only two more questions maybe, so you go first.
Going back to your role as an editor, do you ever with submissions in your notes back actually tell the maker or give hints to the maker of verbal work that they should include in the piece or works that they should seek out to advance their non-sure understanding?
Yes. And we do that both as individual editors, and that's a classic editorial role. If we think somebody's not read the thing they really ought to have read to be writing on that, of course you point it out as kindly as possible. But they're very much the case with who we choose as peer reviewers as well, because obviously for the peer review we do want people who are pretty committed to the video essay form. In other words, hiring someone to do that, well, not hiring because they don't get paid of course, but asking someone to do that who really doesn't like video essays, doesn't think audiovisual film studies should exist, would be a bit dumb. But we do try and, in our choosing of two peer reviewers, usually pick someone who could judge it from the video essay end of things, and who in particular would be open to our mission, which is not to foreclose on simply explanatory work or simply artistically led work, but instead to be completely open to anything that we receive. So that would be one approach. But then we try to have, for example, a specialist in the subject, at least one of the subject area of the video. So with Irene's work, we had Richard, who I think could judge it from philosophically as well, but also is an experienced filmmaker, and we also felt that his work kind of, he would respond openly to Irene's work. But we also employed Seung-Bun Jong, who is an animal studies specialist, one of the world leading animal studies specialists, to provide the other review. And we always kind of cross your fingers and hope that they're not going to hate on the audiovisual aspect, but he didn't. He was really open to that. And he wrote a wonderfully sort of subtle and interesting response. And that's another really great thing. If I really hadn't read what she should have read or hadn't thought of a particular body of film work that would contradict her argument, she would know about it through the review process. But also then on the website we have, two lovely statements that are just adding to the work. Not only, Irene's statement, which is wonderful in its own right, but Soon's quite sceptical, but still very open and interested. And anybody in animal studies, not only should they watch her video, animal studies and cinema studies, they should also read all of these statements because they are absolutely going to be making a central contribution to animal studies.
So, Jean, just one second. Maren wanted to ask a question, and then Jean, you can have the last question.
Okay.
Okay, Maren.
Yeah, my question actually is about the statement from the a director of whatever. Why actually it comes with a statement? Do they already write the statement when they submit it?
Yes. And that's partly, I think this wasn't why we asked for it, but one of the things that it usefully does is it sort of narrows down submissions to people who are serious about having their work published in an academic context. Because if you're making internet videos, you just fire off an email and submit it, and we have to activate our review process each time. So we in a way, asking for an accompanying statement narrows that down. But we're very open again to length, so it could be anything from, I think we say 500 words, but in fact we're not really, wouldn't hold anybody to that if it were 350 words, up to 2,000 words. And people kind of provide statements at all sorts of different lengths, footnotes or like millions of works cited or nothing. But we asked for it because there's a tradition in practice-based academic work of doing that. And we found that in our wider project or our central project of getting this work accepted in academia, that in a way that gives something for people who are not au fait with this work to hold on to. For us, the video is the central thing, but what often the written work could do, for example with Junaid's work, is to situate it in useful ways within an academic debate, so that he didn't have to do that in his video. I mean, he has to cite works at the end, but just imagine he had to sort of argue, justify every single cut in that film according to some academic debate. So we are foregrounding practice work. So for us, it's a supplement, a secondary element, and not what we're really publishing, even though, you know, it's on the page on the same level as the video. I think, in a way, again, we found another useful side effect of it is to produce this discourse so that people can really understand, even though they might have watched the Beauty Amour video and wondered, well, how on earth is that academic? And they have 2,000 words on the other side of the page that will tell them exactly how it is.
But I mean, in a sense, that in itself is very essayistic, that it be hybrid, that it be reflective, that it be open.
It's multimedia.
Those are essayistic qualities in themselves, so they're not necessarily in any way undermining the purity of the audiovisual language. So just one last question, then we really need to have a break. Okay.
It's just, I was interested in what you said about the audiovisual creation of new knowledge and understanding in new languages, and I was stunned by the works that you showed and how they sort of touched on the research that's coming out on radical outside, the post-Anthropocene, new subjectivity, the thinking of new subjectivities, and I thought that I would extend your mission statement to say the creation of new spaces of resistance, because I think that I felt that was really being explored and opened up in the work.
Well, again, that's very lovely of you to say, and I would say that we'd definitely be happy to do that performatively. I think we are performing that space, and we're very conscious of it. I think I have to say, I've obviously watched these videos many times now, and even seen them as a programme of films a number of times. It's interesting to see an academic collection of work as a curated kind of pathway. This is not the order they take in the issue, by the way. So, there was something about having to arrange them for a public performance that made me think about their connections. But watching them with an audience, and exactly what you said comes across so powerfully. I'm also editing a collection of work for other people at the moment on post-cinema and the Anthropocene and goodness knows what. And this work is completely in the centre of that.
It's come out of speculative realism. This really... takes that thinking the radical outside its implications,
exactly,
for colonization.
With Irene's work, I think, and the way she effortlessly revisits Laura Mulvey's work on the gaze, and although it doesn't at first appear to be a video essay about film studies, it's as much about film studies as Laura Mulvey's work on the gaze was about film studies and everything else. And about the political relations between agents and looking relations and hearing relations. So I think you're right, and it's very interesting. We're not this was just the work that came in and that was peer reviewed and gets processed and is coming in the next issue. But it also does say something that some of the people working at the cutting edge in terms of the subject areas of our discipline are also working at the cutting edge in terms of the forms of our discipline.
Right, so I will impose a cut, which is to say, first of all, thank you, Katie, for really fantastic. And it is brilliant to see it as a show, actually. I think that is a really great thing to do. I'm going to ask you, it is 12:30. I think I will decide that the next session, the in-appropriation session, will start at 1:00. because I think we all need to, everyone needs to go outside, have a walk. The little cafe here is open on a Saturday, the one within this building. Otherwise, there's stuff within walking distance, but I really need to, I actually will ask everyone to leave the cinema so that we can actually clear everything out, and then we will start a fresh session at 1 o'clock, which will be the inappropriation, the festival inappropriation. So we're running a tiny bit late in terms of the day, but I think we're okay. I think we've got a little cushion later on. Okay, so thank you very much to Katie above all.